Now, I must say, last time I spoke to you was about the kingdom remade, and really it was about hope. And a few weeks after I spoke to you, my coffee machine broke, and I really felt this was God trying to explain hope to me in a new way. And it was also God showing me his sense of humour when coffee is a really important part of my day. And so I came and spoke on hope, and then 3 weeks later I had no coffee. And so I learnt a lot. I'm a bit worried about this week, though, and wisdom and foolishness and how this is actually going to play out. So you are looking at the book of Proverbs, and I guess this is not really a book that you sit and read through all the way. It's often referred to, but I think we often end up sort of dipping in and out with a verse here and a verse there. And this last week, Chris spoke to you about what wisdom and the wise, and this week we're looking at protection from foolishness. And so this book that was written a long time ago is full of talking about wisdom, but it also contains lots of practical understanding for daily life, for farming, for family life, and it's really a book that's directed at every one of us. And it's not just to teach us knowledge, not just so that we go away knowing more stuff, not to make us more intelligent, but it's there to give us wisdom. And this meant in that the word that they used there means a skill. It means something practical, practical knowledge. And it was also a word that was used actually for craftspeople, this idea of wisdom. And it's talking about the skill in the art of godly living, as one commentary I read put it. It's skill in the art of godly living. And the book introduces us to a cast of characters. There's the wise, there's the simple, and there's the fool. Now, the wise person is the person that lives out that wisdom every day. Whatever circumstances come their way, the wise are making good progress. Now, simple people, if I went to work and said, you're a simple person, I'd probably get punched. And it's not as much of an insult as it sounds now. But simple people are the people who are just at the beginning. They don't necessarily have full commitment either to wisdom or to foolishness. But because they haven't yet made a commitment to either wisdom or foolishness, they can really easily be misled. They haven't put that knowledge into practice. The wise person is skilled in the art of godly living. They are living out that knowledge. But the simple person hasn't put that knowledge into practice yet. And they sometimes in Proverbs, the simple people don't have any regard for God. They just don't listen to him. But simple people are not in a good place, but they're definitely not beyond hope. They aren't beyond the possibility of change. And there's the fool as well. And sometimes that talks about foolish people. And so foolish people are the ones who are against God. They're the opposite of the wise. And Proverbs tells us there are lots of ways that people can be foolish or show that they are foolish. They might be stupid. They might be wicked. They might reject God. In general, the fool is the one who's against God, and they are dangerous. But they can still learn sense. Proverbs 8:5 tells us that. So wisdom is putting knowledge into practice. It is living out that knowledge. And Proverbs gives us lots of different ways that we can work it out, and many different ways of life that it can be applied, and some of which you're going to be looking at in your series, friendships and family. And there's loads in this book, and maybe in the past you've dipped in and out of it and found it hard. Now, Tim and Kathy Keller wrote, "A proverb is like hard candy. If you just bite down on it, you get little out of it and may even get a broken tooth. Instead, you must meditate on it until the sweetness of insight comes." And this whole book is full of sayings, and sometimes we dip in and out and we take one out, we take a proverb out and we think, yep, this is going to come true, this is a promise for my life. And sometimes that's when we can break a tooth on Proverbs, that we pluck a verse out and think, this is the way things are going to be. If I do this, then I will live a long time. And suddenly life doesn't turn out that way. And Proverbs is not meant to be used like that. We're meant to sit, we're meant to meditate. It's meant to filter through us. Now, I don't promise you today any sweet insight, but hopefully we'll get something out of this morning that is practical and will help to protect us from foolishness. So let's dive in it, and we're going to look at Proverbs chapter 9. So if you've got a Bible, then please turn it on or turn over to Proverbs and chapter 9. So I'm going to read from the NIV. Wisdom has built her house. She has set up its seven pillars. She has prepared her meat and mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her servants, and she called down from the highest point of the city, "Let all who are simple come to my house." To those who have no sense, she says, "Come, eat my food and drink the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and you will live. Walk in the way of insight. Whoever corrects a mocker invites insults. Whoever rebukes the wicked incurs abuse. Do not rebuke mockers, or they will hate you. Rebuke the wise, and they will love you. Instruct the wise, and they will be wiser still. Teach the righteous, and they will add to their learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For through wisdom your days will be many, and years will be added to your life. If you are wise, your wisdom will reward you. If you are a mocker, you alone will suffer. Folly is an unruly woman. She is simple and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house, on a seat at the highest point of the city, calling out to those who pass by, who go straight on their way, "Let all who are simple come to my house." To those who have no sense, she says, "Stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious." But little do they know that the dead are there, and her guests are deep in the realm of the dead. So here, wisdom and foolishness, or folly, as presented as two people, as two women, and each have got their own house. And this chapter is written in a way that makes us sort of draw comparisons between these two people. And there are some similarities, and there are quite a lot of differences. But each woman sits outside their house, and they're calling, trying to attract people into their house, to the feast that is in there. So at the beginning of the chapter, we discover that Wisdom's house is well built. It's big. She's built it herself. It's got pillars, so it's got to be pretty big. She's prepared the food herself. She's killed it. It's meat that she's offering, and wine. The wine is prepared. It's been spiced or watered down, just exactly as people would have liked it. The table is laid, and everything is ready. Wisdom has been busy. And then Wisdom sends the servants out to call people to come to the house to eat the meal. "Let all who are simple come to my house," the maidservants call out. To those who have no sense, she says, "Come, eat my food and drink the wine I've mixed. Leave your simple ways and you will live. Walk in the way of insight." So Wisdom wants you to come to her house to feast on wisdom, to enjoy it, and then to feel its benefits in your life. And in the chapter, we don't get very much description of the house of foolishness, of folly, but we do read that this woman, folly, is unruly. Other translations say that she is loud and seductive. She's simple. She is without knowledge. She doesn't head off to find people, but she sits at the door of her house. But she calls out, and it starts with exactly the same words, "Let all who are simple come to my house." To those who have no sense, it's the same group of people that she's calling to, but her words are different. "Stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious." So wisdom and folly actually seem quite similar. They're both women. They both have these houses. They're both giving a similar offer. And at first glance, they do seem the same, even down to the words that they use. And foolishness in general is very attractive to everyone. And verse 15 makes it clear that you don't have to be at the wrong place at the wrong time to hear foolishness calling. She's calling out to those who pass by, those who go straight on their way. This is not the people that are hanging around brothels even though they're married. These are not the people who are sitting in a pub if they're an alcoholic. They're not the people who've suddenly accidentally wandered into the shady part of town. These are people that are going straight on their way. And yet those are also the people that hear foolishness call them. And we can be doing everything right. We can be what seems to be on the right path. We can feel like we are following God's call. And then foolishness can call to us. So how does wisdom keep us from foolishness? And it's very easy to give in to foolishness. How often do we hear celebrities or politicians or people in power, even in church, talk about a moment of weakness? And how often have we overstepped that mark? We know what we should have done, when we know what God wanted for us. And we know the consequences might have been if we stayed for that extra 10 minutes, sending that text message that we thought about for a long time and then sent anyway, saying yes when we should have said no. It's really tempting, and it's very, very easy for that moment of weakness to hit all of us. The house of foolishness sounds very tempting. She looks very tempting. The call sounds so similar. Until you start to really look at it. Wisdom offered you wine and meat. Foolishness offers you bread and water. And not only that, it's water that has to be stolen. What sort of person has to steal water? And the other guests aren't much to write home about either, because they're all dead. So both wisdom and foolishness are calling out. They're both calling out at the same time. And we have to make a choice. We can't sit on the fence here. We have to make a choice. We either follow the call of wisdom or we follow the call of foolishness. But how do we do that? Well, like every good Sunday school quiz, the answer is, of course, Jesus. And Paul in 1 Corinthians and Colossians tells us that Jesus is the true wisdom of God. And if we follow wisdom, if we're looking for wisdom, we're following Jesus and we're looking for Jesus. If we search for wisdom, we find it in Jesus. So how do we get wisdom? We ask Jesus for it. And then we listen. And we learn to listen to his voice above everything else, above the call of foolishness. And that won't be easy. It won't always be the loudest voice. We have to learn to recognize the voice of Jesus. Because Jesus too seems to take this idea of wisdom and foolishness and he makes it his own. He tells his own stories about wise and foolish people. Matthew 7 talks about the wise and foolish builders. The wise man building his house on the rock and the foolish builder with sand at his foundation. And who is the wise man? Jesus says it's everyone who hears his word and does them. It's the skill of godly living. Later on in Matthew, Jesus tells the parable of the wedding feast. It's quite a lot like this story. The king sends out his servants to bring people in for the feast. And here we see the possibility of having a relationship with Jesus and being part of that feast and eating with him. Matthew 25 has the parable of wise and foolish virgins, people on the lookout for things. But it's not just in the New Testament, the stories of Jesus, that we see this idea of wisdom and foolishness. There is something very tempting about the house of foolishness that I think hits right at the heart of every single human, even since the very beginning, when Eve was approached with temptation and where Eve was not necessarily listening for the voice of wisdom. And in our own lives, I'm sure there's lots of ways that you can think of where you have heard the voice of foolishness and where you might have been tempted into that house of foolishness rather than listening for the voice and the house of wisdom. And maybe you can think of times where you've definitely heard the voice of wisdom and you've gone that way. There are two ways. There are two invitations. And it demands a response. These invitations demand an RSVP from us. We need to learn to put Jesus first, to go with him with our needs and questions, to fill up on wisdom. What he is offering is so much more. We need to see foolishness for what it is, something thinly veiled that offers something so much better than it is when you get in there. Because that way, the house of foolishness leads to death. So how else can wisdom protect us from foolishness? I think there's a clue back there in chapter 9. We started off with this description of the call of wisdom. We end with the call of folly. And in between, there's this section in verses 7 to 9. It says, "Whoever corrects a mocker invites insults. Whoever rebukes the wicked incurs abuse. Do not rebuke mockers, or they will hate you. Rebuke the wise, and they will love you. Instruct the wise, and they'll be wiser still. Teach the righteous, and they will add to their learning." And I've been thinking about this section a lot, and thinking about how we can learn to accept correction. And I know this is something I'm really not very good at. And I started thinking about this passage over Christmas, and then I was praying a lot about it before I went back to work, that I would be able to accept correction. Never pray this, because you know what is going to come next. So the first day back at work, my colleague had been on holiday, and she rang me and asked about an entry I'd put in our shared diary, and it was missing a load of information. And my first reaction was, oh, well, the computer program's gone wrong, clearly. And I was sure I'd put it in. I put the phone down, and I thought, oh, Sarah Jane, this is about accepting correction, isn't it? And I realised it was probably more likely to be user error. And I was putting so much in the diary, I must have got one wrong, but my first reaction was, oh, the computer program did it wrong. So I rang my colleague up and said, look, it was probably me. She didn't really care. She just said, put the stuff in the diary. So I did. Then last week, last Tuesday, I got an email about there's a room that I'm responsible for and a particular collection that I'm supposed to look after, and it had all got in a bit of a mess because it's quite low down on my list of priorities. And it was raised in a meeting that I wasn't in, and then someone was sent a message, they sent me an email and said, please could we have a meeting and talk about this room and this collection and how we can make it better. And what is my first reaction? A massive sigh and a huge eye roll. Why did that person have to raise it in a meeting that I wasn't even at? I wasn't there to defend myself. When am I supposed to sort this out? And my next reaction? Go and moan to my other colleagues about the fact that this person raised something in a meeting about me when I wasn't there. And then as soon as I got back to my office after that conversation, and my office door shut, and I sat at my desk, and I thought, oh, Sarah Jane, you've done it again. I've been defensive, and I haven't listened to other people. I haven't got it right. And I wonder if they sat in that meeting and tried to work out who would be the one that had to raise this with Sarah Jane. And let's do it in an email, because it's much easier. Is it just me that's like this? So maybe at the end we'll have a big prayer time for me. But last Sunday was another case of this. So I did over 20 years in what Christian author Rob Lacey calls the Brethren School of Bible Facts. And I grew up hearing lots of Bible stories, lots of Old Testament stuff, getting the answers to really obscure Bible quizzes. And last Sunday I left home to go to church. I was obviously late. Because I always am. And at the end of my garden, my garden gate has got a big hop plant that grows over it. And obviously this time of year, there's no hops. It's all dried out. And as I walked underneath it, my hair got caught in the hops. And I thought, oh, just like Absalom, which is a story in 2 Samuel about David's son, whose hair got caught in an oak tree when he was riding underneath it on a mule. So then I went to church, lovely. Went to lunch at my parents' house, lovely. After dinner, I was helping to clear up. I was stuck in the dishwasher. And my dad said, could you just move that dish down to the bottom because it'll clean better? Of course, I said, and just moved it. No, of course I didn't. I kind of stomped around like a teenager and went, well, if you're so good at stacking this dishwasher, then maybe you should do it. And then flounced off and didn't stack the dishwasher anymore. Is this wisdom? Is this knowledge in action? I can know obscure Bible stories of the Old Testament about people's hair getting caught, but I can't put that into practice in my daily life. Is this a demonstration of someone who is wise? Maybe you have had a similar experience over Christmas. There is something very special about times with families that really bring out this side of ourselves, don't you find? Maybe you have found yourself caught between wisdom and foolishness. And maybe you have learnt to choose wisely. But wisdom and foolishness are calling, and we must make our choice. If we have chosen poorly, then we need to remember I am not beyond God's grace. And God can still change us. There is still hope for us there. There is still the opportunity for forgiveness. There is still the opportunity for us to learn to live out godly skill. And our faith has to be knowledge in action. In this country, we have a driving practical test and a driving theory test, because it's no good just knowing the theory and thinking you can drive. Once you've passed the theory, that still doesn't mean that you can drive. You still have to have practical lessons, and it's the same with knowledge and wisdom, that wisdom is knowledge in practice. You've probably heard the saying that knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is not putting it in a fruit salad. Apparently, philosophy is wondering whether ketchup is a smoothie. But wisdom has to be where we put our head knowledge into action in our lives. That's how we're going to be protected from foolishness. We have to live it out. And that is the sign that we are really following wisdom. When Jesus is really ruling in our hearts, when we live out what we claim, when we live out the wisdom, knowledge, knowing that tomato is a fruit, wisdom, not putting in a fruit salad. For that reason, Emily, would you? I've got some fruit salad sweets for you. If you would please take a fruit salad sweet, you can feel free to. There are some what they're called starbursts, if you are not a fan of fruit salads. I went round 4 shops in Bury St Edmunds yesterday to look for fruit salad sweets. They're much, I really missed Woolworths at that point in time. Woolworths pick and mix, what a delight that was. They're surprisingly hard to find. I also think they don't taste as good as they used to, but apparently they now have fruit juice in. Which is not right at all. But if you remember that quote that we had at the beginning from Tim and Kathy Keller, a proverb is like hard candy. If you just bite down on it, you get little out of it and may even get a broken tooth. Instead, you must meditate on it until the sweetness of insight comes. Do unwrap your sweet if you would like it, and you can eat it as well. Don't just unwrap it and then sit with it, because we'll all be sitting here with really sticky hands. But as you eat your fruit salad sweet, think about wisdom and knowledge. And meditate on this chapter of Proverbs that we've looked at. The house of wisdom and the house of foolishness. Who have you been listening to in your life? Have you been following the voice of wisdom, or have you been following the voice of foolishness? Have you been tempted by the house of foolishness? Have you given in and gone into that house of foolishness? What teaching have you been given that sounds so much like wisdom? What words have you been listening to? What voices have you been listening to, which sounds so much like wisdom, but now when you come to examine it, it's really taking you down a different path? Where in your life have you let a tomato into your fruit salad? Where are you following foolishness and not following wisdom? Where is God telling you that you've been going the wrong way, but you just don't want to listen to that voice? Where has God been prodding you that you've heard it so many times before and maybe you've just ignored him? Maybe you've tried to keep God out of that bit of your life. What bit of your life are you building on sandy ground? Where are your foundations a little bit wobbly? Where would you need Jesus? Where do you need forgiveness? Where do you need to learn humility and how to accept correction? Where do you need to choose wisdom? Where do you need to choose life? I'm going to read some words from Proverbs chapter 1 from the Message translation. Lady Wisdom goes out in the street and shouts, "A At the town centre, she makes her speech. In the middle of the traffic, she takes her stand. At the busiest corner, she calls out, "Simpletons, how long will you wallow in ignorance? Cynics, how long will you feed your cynicism? Idiots, how long will you refuse to learn? About face, I can revise your life. Look, I'm ready to pour out my spirit on you. I'm ready to tell you all I know. As it is, I've called, but you've turned a deaf ear. I've reached out to you, but you've ignored me. Because you hated knowledge and had nothing to do with the fear of God. Because you wouldn't take my advice and brushed aside all my offers to train you. Well, you've made your bed. Now lie in it. You wanted your own way. Now, how do you like it? Don't you see what happens, you simpletons, you idiots? Carelessness kills. Complacency is murder. First, pay attention to me and then relax. You can take it easy. You're in good hands. Look, I'm ready to pour out my spirit on you. I'm ready to tell you all I know. As it is, I've called, but you've turned a deaf ear. I've reached out to you, but you've ignored me. Shall we pray? Loving Heavenly Father, thank you for the voice of wisdom. Would you help us to follow it? Would you help us to learn to look for that voice, to listen really hard for it, even when it seems so much more tempting to follow the way of foolishness? Father, would you help us to listen to Jesus? Would you help us to get to know his voice? Would you help him to lead us? Please forgive us for the times when we don't put you first, when we haven't learned how to be humble and to accept correction. Father, would you help us to find the tomatoes in our fruit salad where we haven't put wisdom into practice? Would you help us today and this week to learn more about you and to follow the path of wisdom? In Jesus' name, amen.